and welcome to episode 244 of Checkpoint Chat. My name is Alessandro Barbosa. I'm joined by Matthew Figueroa. Why are you smiling at me?
I can't help it. Just because of what just transpired before we started recording. we thought I lost an episode and I published and I somehow skipped the naming of an episode.
Listen, Matthew always has to remind me what episode number we're on. And today of all days, I decided to just double check him. And thank God I did, because this man out here was about to sell me down the river, telling me there was episode 245.
And I was just like, I'll do it one day, just for shits and giggles.
It's wrong. And then we thought he had mislabeled the current one uploaded, and that was a whole... Everything's okay.
I can't remember if this is a story we told you in person or if I've told you on the podcast or off air, but... Every time I meet Lenska for lunch, I'm sure I've told you this. You can tell me if it happened in personal, whatever. But whenever I go into the office twice a week and Lenska and I meet for lunch because we work very close to each other, we walk like 1 o'clock, we both leave our offices and we sort of just meet halfway or wherever we're going. And I've said
I know what you're going to say, yes.
And yeah. And subconsciously, I think it would be hilarious if I just walk past her. I just don't say a word. I look like I'm just a busy person and I just walk past her and I just flat out ignore her and just see what her reaction is. But every time as I get close to her, I look up, I make eye contact and I smirk and I can't help it. I just cannot help it. And that's exactly what I had now. I was like, just don't think about what happened. It's fine. It was just a silly error. And then you start the episode. I'm like, yeah, that was funny.
Yeah, I just looked at you and you were just like, you look like you're about to burst into laughter. I was like, what just happened?
And the best thing is, Lenska and I sometimes, you'll have these unspoken communication moments with Shani or whatever, where there's something's happened and you look at each other, you just know. Nothing is said, but you both have the exact same thoughts. We've had that, Lenska and I, like on the bus or the train, where we're sitting opposite each other and something funny happens, but it's not like polite to laugh out loud or whatever. And we look at each other, we're just like, like have to break eye contact, like don't look, don't make
you do the laugh. You do the big eyebrow thing, you just like,
it's great.
If you know, you know.
Yeah, so sorry, that's why I was smoking. It was just hilarious in my head.
I just thought, because I know when I entered, I looked away because I was looking if my window was open because I just suddenly felt stuffy and hot. And now I can't get up to open the window because it's too late.
That is serious because I have the exact same thing. It's really hot here just because I put the heating on and I can't get up and turn it down because Lenska's not here. So I'm just being blasted.
Is it really cold there now? It's so cold.
I haven't been out today, but... So Lenska leaves so Thursday's the day I work from home. Lenska went in today and she ended up walking to work because she's a mad lad today. But she ended up meeting a colleague who lives nearby and they both walked to the office. So, but she left like 6:45, whatever time she left. And I woke up and looked at messages and I see she's messaged a family group. And this is me through half open eyes reading this. And she says, "It's so cold today, lol." And it's a screenshot of the weather app and it says -1. and I look at that and I just think, damn, that's pretty cold. Get out of bed, look out the window. It's snowed somewhere in the UK, but it hasn't snowed yet, but it's just white. You'd swear it's about to snow. And all I can think is that Lenska's out there walking as we speak.
That is cold. People asked if it was cold when I was there and I was like, nah, it wasn't too bad. It was like 10 degrees when I was in London and that was like cold, but not
-1 when I woke up.
-1. That is a drastic change. Like,
I did talk to her. She said, nah, it wasn't so bad. She felt toasty. I was like, well, then you lay it. You're good.
And by the time you're listening to this, it will probably be much, much colder in the UK.
I know.
Would have snowed.
And I will not be there. Cannot wait.
This is... our game of the year episode. We recorded this quite a while in advance because good old Matthew is taking a well-deserved early break. Not from
so are you
work, but from me.
Oh yeah, you know, I mean, if you put it, if you want to put it that way,
yeah, we have to tell people the truth. Yeah, yeah, we have to tell people the truth. So we are doing, I mean, if you've listened to previous episodes, you'll know we're doing a lot of things like out of order and ahead of time. And anyway, this will be the last episode for a year from Checkpoint Chat, as always. Mm-hmm. We'll be back sometime in January, but we'll get to that later. And you can watch socials for when we are back, but it'll be sometime then. But this is the culmination of a great year of games, I think. What a very, very strong year. Is it the best year ever? I hear everyone asking. I don't know. That's such a subjective thing. Who knows? For me, I will say that this has been a very great year of video games, but also the most busy year of my life. Mm-hmm. And so I haven't got to play all of the great video games that I could have. So very difficult for me to say.
Adulting.
Matthew difficult. Moved entire fucking countries this year. So yeah, I would say also a challenging year for video games.
Before we started recording that, so because we've covered this before, we both nerds, we keep track of what we've finished and what we've played.
I use Notion now.
I have a 2.5 month gap between rolling credits on two different games. I finished
it's wild.
Star Wars Jedi Survivor, moved countries, 2.5 months later finished Final Fantasy 16. It's just this huge gap.
You've made up for it though. You've done very well at the end of this year to like finish games quickly. Yeah. Holy shit. Like if I think of all the games that came out near the end of this year and like which ones we both picked up at the same time and how rapidly you've got through most of them. It's kind of insane. But I mean, there's like glaring omissions on not. I think our top five lists are pretty indicative pretty solid, of like the year that's been there. But like, if you had to look at our overall list of games played and games finished, there are definitely omissions there that I don't like, but hey, life is life. So it's a good way to say that these lists, again, are subjective. These are my top five games of the year, Matty's top five games of the year. They might not be your top five games of the year. You might ask, why was this game not included at all on this, even though it won Jeff Keighley's Game of the Year awards, which would have happened by now, and I don't know the result. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I didn't play that fucking game. I don't know. Like,
also,
like I haven't played Baldur's Gate 3. I haven't touched that game.
Yeah.
So it doesn't appear at all on
my
list.
If you are here waiting to hear us talk about Baldur's Gate 3, both terribly sorry. I'm very sorry.
It is a game I'm fully planning to play through the holidays in December. But like, it's just not in time for our list. Also, so it is what it is.
Don't come at me when Celeste is number one. All these years later. Year after year.
Every year you have to tell people not to come at you for Celeste. And every year you make it your top game.
I can't help it. You know, Celeste's just best game ever made. One of the best games ever made. But yeah, again, just to echo what you say, it's subjective. We both said, and this isn't a trade secret, I can tell you now, whenever it comes to talking about games of the year or best games of all time, the games I tell you today will not be the games I tell you tomorrow. Maybe I'll wake up tomorrow and go, shit, I feel more strongly about this game today than I did yesterday. It's just what it is. So yeah, please put the pitchfork down. It's okay to have a different opinion.
I guess with that, should we just dive into some honorable mention. So we obviously, if you haven't listened before, we divide up our lists. We basically choose our top five games of the year and we just go through them in alternating fashion. But prior to that, we just want to give shout outs to games that didn't make top five for whatever reason. These are very just quick mentions just to like get out there.
Not at all.
It's nice that you tried award.
Honorable mention number one, Forspoken. No, I'm kidding.
Wow, tried harder there.
You've got what? Two honorable mentions.
Yeah, I've got two.
Let me rattle off mine quickly. So I have Street Fighter VI, purely because I love fighter games, but casually, I'm not a big fighting game fan. But I did enjoy the combination of the single player of Street Fighter VI, as ridiculous as it is, combined with the very good multiplayer. I didn't put nearly as much time into it as I would have liked to, but I respect Street Fighter VI for doing what it did for fighting games. I think it's got one of the more interesting lobby systems, and it is just a visual treat to look at and a fun game to play. Also, just the inclusion of modern controls, just bridging the gap between hardcore pros and just casual players. I think it's such a smart move. And I don't know if Street Fighter VI is the first fighting game to do that, but I feel like it is the first mainstream game that I know of that's really ticked that box. And I'm pretty sure all other fighting games that follow are going to learn from that mechanic. Mm. So, yeah, do you want me to just rattle them off?
Yeah, go for it.
This one will shock you. Cocoon is an honorable mention purely because it is a phenomenal game. Don't get me wrong. It should be on my top five. But again, I feel that it's just not there for me today. But Cocoon's this.
I'm surprised. I won't lie.
Surprising indie game that I knew nothing about that I played based on probably your recommendation or just general sentiments on Twitter. And it is this quiet, unassuming 4 to 6 hour puzzle game that is mind-bending and so smart. It's just, it's a must play. And it's on Game Pass. I picked it up, played it, absolutely loved it.
Good game that.
I mean, if you think that's shocking, not in my top five, Super Mario Bros. Wonder, which is also... I mean, it's a Mario game. Mario games always hit the spot for me because I absolutely love platforming titles. And it's not to say that Mario Wonder is not deserving of a top five spots. It's just, I really enjoyed it. It just feels that for me today, it's just not in that top five. But I love what they've done with the 2D side of Mario again. They've injected, as they always do, a whole lot of creativity. There's so many surprises. You never know what you're going to get from a level. And they introduce a new mechanic for one or two levels. They take it away and it's perfect. It's what a great game from Nintendo. And I think a good foundation for future 2D Mario games. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a Wonder 2 for the simple reason that, you know, they can have a whole lot of overworlds and then just throw in wacky ideas with Wonders, Wonder Seeds, I think they were called. If you thought Mario Wonder was a shock not being in the top five, let me tell you, Spider-Man 2.
What the fuck is on your top five? Jesus.
Spider-Man 2 is
what is happening?
A fantastic game. Very well polished, great sequel. And I absolutely love it. I can't really knock it other than say, and this isn't even a knock, in just saying that it's more Spider-Man. Not that that's a bad thing. It just... for me, it didn't mix the formula up too much. And again, it's not to say it's a bad thing. It's just my top five, they're all there for a very specific reason, or, you know, there's a reason for them being there. And Spider-Man 2 just didn't hit that spot today. And then my last one, I think, is probably the more surprising one, is Bayonetta Origins Serrata and the Last Demon, which I feel it's a Nintendo Switch exclusive. It is a prequel to the Bayonetta character action games that we know today. It is nothing like those games. It is a fairy tale-esque puzzle / narrative driven game. And it just really surprised me. It's a bit rough around the edges in some parts, which, prevented it from being in my top five, but I feel it is highly underrated and I think more people should play it 100%. I hope it makes its way off the Switch for other people to play on other platforms.
It's really nice when you get surprised by a game like that, when you don't have like the expectation of this should be good.
Yeah.
You know, driving behind it. So yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's my five honorable mentions.
Sure.
Just like
at least
that.
Two there that I thought would be on your actual list. So that is very surprising.
If anything, it's an indication of the year we've had. I mean, there's a reason
that's
2023 people are saying, wow, best year in gaming ever. It's because there's just been really good games this year. Tell me what your honorable mentions are.
So the two here, I guess I can add one or two more, but like the two main ones here are literally here predominantly because they're games I think would be on my top five had I had more time to play through them. So like, I'm not including Baldur's Gate here because I haven't touched it, so I have no idea. But based on what I've played so far, these two probably would be there, but I haven't played them enough for certain. So Alan Wake 2, I'm like early days in this game, just a couple of hours in, but absolutely adoring what I'm playing. And like, given another week with the way I'm like chewing through it, like this might have been different. It probably would have been on my top five, but I just can't confidently say that, you know, having played maybe a tenth or an eighth of it, whatever. But I think it's a pretty solid game. Yeah, some of the best like stuff Remedy's ever done so far. So really excited to carry on playing with that. Same with Mario Wonder. Just haven't had the time. Came out the same time as Spider-Man, and then like got stuck into a lot of work, did some travel, played more Zelda. This is also the thing. Like, I traveled where I had the most time with my Switch probably all of this year, and I played almost exclusively Zelda. And that's not because I didn't want to force myself to play Wonder just because. And so I just haven't put time into it. So I do like what I've played. I think it's really, really smart and really clever. It's just that's why it's not on top five. I guess then just to kind of echo what you said about two other games. No, forgotten. Oh, Spider-Man 2. Spider-Man 2 is a game that I did play. I platinumed it. I think it's very good. It's not on my top five purely because I feel the same as you. I think it's more Spider-Man. I think this is also a game that for me was kind of brought down by the weight of expectation, where reviews for this came out and the sort of praise was like, this is an exceptional superhero story. This is a mature, or not a mature, but like a new benchmark for this. And I just found like, I enjoyed the story, but I didn't find it at all surprising. It just felt like a Spider-Man story, like through and through, that kind of went through the same motions that I expected. And I think that when it comes to breaking expectation, it never met the sort of bar that was set by the first one, because I think the first one was like, everyone didn't know what an Insomniac Spider-Man game was, and that was exceptional. It was like the ending to that game is still something I think about every now and then, whereas I can't really tell you bespoke moments from Spider-Man 2. But there's some cool moments there. It's a great sequel. It's a good game. I think.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit here and say this isn't like one of the best games you can buy on PlayStation 5.
That's my thing as well. It's more Spider-Man, which isn't a bad thing. It's just not as exceptional as I'd hoped it would be. Which
it's not as surprising.
This man out here bashing me for putting it on my honorable list also has it on his honorable list.
And then the last one is Viewfinder. I really, really, really like this game. It's a like 4-hour puzzle adventure, sort of in the same vein as like Portal or Quantum Conundrum or something like that, where you use like a camera to take photos of your environment, and then you can kind of project those pictures out into the world. So you can use like a picture of a staircase to like project a staircase in another piece in the environment and create like a staircase for you to climb up. It's like a super novel idea that always made me go like, wow, every time it like happened. And I really wish I knew how they programmed it. I just wish the story was a bit better. I think the story is kind of lacking. But yeah, it's a good game. I think it's one of the best puzzle games you can play right now. So yeah, would recommend.
Nice.
That's honorable mentions.
When your honorable mentions are games that good, you have to wonder.
It is kind of.
You have to wonder what's on the list.
Kind of nuts. I'm still like rearranging the order of my fucking
list.
My
list is locked in. This is what I'm running with now. So
okay, you go first. Let me lock in my list.
To kick off? So my number five is Final Fantasy 16. I will acknowledge that Final Fantasy 16 is not. It is an imperfect Final Fantasy game. It has a lot wrong with it. However, I mean, first of all, it is not a role-playing game. Don't let anyone fool you. This is the furthest thing from an RPG you will play. Okay, it is a character. It's a character action game, and it is definitely not. It does not feel like a Final Fantasy from that point of view. However, in all other aspects, in terms of characters, grand story, you know, the theme of crystals and summons and that, it is very much a Final Fantasy story. And despite its flaws, I had an absolute blast playing this game from beginning to end. I loved the cast of characters. I thought the story was very, very grand, and you know, it's been compared to Game of Thrones a lot, and I completely get that. Mm. It's just, you know, this whole big wars happening and all these different families and allegiances, et cetera, et cetera. And again, while the game, I think its conclusion was a bit weak. Well, not the conclusion, but the final chapters were a bit weak. Everything else preceding that, just, I loved it. What an absolute joy to play. And there are one or two cinematic moments in there that I'll forever remember. Just playing it going like, wow, I can't believe I'm doing this.
Click L3 and R3 to accept the truth.
Absolute best game. eye-rolling moments, no doubt, but definitely...
It's the perfect balance of cheese and seriousness and just, like, it knows it's not taking itself, like, uber seriously all the time, and that's why it works.
Yeah, also, I think one of the better Final Fantasies in recent years, you know, Seven Remake aside, I think it's miles ahead of 15, 13 had its issues, but like it feels that 16 is a step in the right direction. That is my number five.
I do like that Final Fantasies, like the mainline ones now, at least they feel, it feels like their legacy is, we are imperfect games, but people appreciate the shots that we take. Like 15, like you said, now is 16 is better than 15, but 15 is like a phenomenal game.
Oh yeah,
in so many ways.
I still love 15,
and it is so bad in other ways. It is like imperfect in so many ways, but it is a game like I will fondly remember recall. And I think that goes for 16 as well. Yeah. It's like, it's not perfect, but you can see the ambition in what was going in there, and you can only just appreciate it.
Last thing I want to say on 16 is that I think it's, I don't know what the feature was called, but the fact that you can pause at any moment, very much like Amazon TV, you can pause at any moment and it tells you which characters on scene, exactly where you are. And it's all contextual. It's not like, this is Clive. It's like, this is Clive. And currently, and it tells you exactly what's going on. That is just an added extra touch that I think so many other RPGs can learn from. Because, you know, when you're playing this huge spanning world stuffed with different characters and, you know, plot points, for a gamer like me, it's very difficult to keep track of. Or I forget things easily. Like, I forget what I did last week or 2 weeks ago. To have that information in front of me whenever I want it was just really, really smart, and I hope to see more games use it.
And just turning the, I mean, every game sort of does this, but turning like the collection of lore into more of a tertiary quest. It wasn't really a side quest, but like every time I went and spoke to...
I can't remember his name either.
Old man. And like that level up bar went like three or four times over. I was just like, oh God, there's so much for me to read. And I'd spend like half an hour just reading the updated lore entries, which are often quite insightful. Like, you know, there are certain things you didn't pick up on, which, you know, transpired, which was, it was really well done. Cool. Just a bummer that third act kind of goes off the fucking rails a little bit.
I love
anyway.
It. Absolutely love it.
What is your okay, I've locked in my list, I think. We'll see. My fifth one is Resident Evil 4 Remake, or just Resident Evil 4, I guess. This is a game, shockingly, I've never finished before. I've played the original Resident Evil 4 numerous times, maybe to around like the first act or so. I was still like in the village, really. And never really progressed beyond there. But, you know, it has so much history behind it and so much fanfare behind it, it being the game that developed the over-the-shoulder shooter and kind of changed action games in general forever. And I think with Remake, you know, there was a lot that Capcom could have gone wrong. Everyone was like, this is the game they shouldn't remake because, you know, it's so good still. Yeah. And they somehow improved on that perfection because this game is fucking phenomenal. It is so good. It is just the epitome of what is good about Resident Evil. A very fine line between horror and camp, and this one definitely skewing more towards the camp, but in a completely self-aware way that never goes too far, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then the remake also, I think, amps up the horror in a way that the original never was. It is a lot scarier. It is a lot more visceral and real. And I absolutely loved it. It's expanded in the right ways. It feels like a game. If you were told that this was a game that was a product of 2023 and not something that was remaking something old, it would stand on its own two feet today without the nostalgia. It stand as like a very good game in its own right. And I think Capcom cannot be stopped right now with Resident Evil. They just can do no wrong right now.
Don't say that, because the Capcom came back from Oblivion. Okay.
Yo, they came back from Dire Straits, I'll tell you that much.
Before Resident Evil 7, when Capcom was not in a good place. Before Resident Evil 7 and Monster Hunter World, they were...
I mean, we were at E3 when they showed off Resident Evil 7 coming out in January, and everyone kind of fucking eye-rolled at that and was like, wow, well, this is going to be a fucking train wreck. Such a small... Good. And look at that. That just kicked off their new renaissance.
Wow. So everyone thought, I mean, okay, there was a history there. But you know why everyone thought it was going to be a train wreck? It's because Capcom were like, Resident Evil 7, out in 6 months. And we were like, what?
Yeah, exactly.
And that trend just continued. They're like, yeah, here's a new game, out in 6 months. And you know what? They've pulled it off each and every time. So
I mean, they've done that exactly with Dragon Dogma. Dragon's Dogma. They announced a release date like 3 months out from its actual release. So
okay.
Yeah.
I like Resident Evil, and you might hear more about it later. I'm just gonna put that out. My number four is Hi-Fi Rush. Which is a surprise to me, purely because when Hi-Fi Rush Shadow dropped, so if you don't know, Hi-Fi Rush came out in February of this year, made by Tango Gameworks, the people who did Ghostwire Tokyo. The Evil Within, like these
very like poorly received.
Yeah, like these very more horror focused titles, first person, third person, whatever. And then along comes Hi-Fi Rush, which was announced and dropped, and I think it was day and date, like, hey, we've worked on this game and it's available on Game Pass now. And I thought, that looks okay, like, you know, whatever. Played this game, unreal what teams can put out when they're just given a little bit of creative freedom or just the time to work on something different or completely left field. I mean, Hi-Fi Rush is the furthest thing from survival horror. It is a character action beat 'em up to music. I don't
rhythm-based thing.
And it really, really surprised me. And I think that's why it's on my top five, because it's fantastic from beginning to end. Love the cast of characters. The fact that you are playing a game where your attacks have to be timed with music, like that in itself is not a new mechanic, but I think it just does it so stylishly and in such a different, unique way. And to touch on that, the aesthetic, that comic book hard outline look, visual idea it's got is just, it's really cool. I love it. Easy top five for me. And I don't know if there's a sequel there, but they've established such a different, fun, and unique world to play in. So yeah, good for them. Really, really like
that. God, I hope there's a sequel. It would be a crime if that is the only Hi-Fi Rush we get. Sure. Oh,
there has to be.
Yeah, has to be. Cool. Next on my list, this is where we start overlapping somewhat. Final Fantasy 16. can you believe it? I mean, I don't think there's a game this year that I've spent more time playing, purely because I couldn't pull myself away from Final Fantasy 16, but it caught me in that loop of wanting to do everything, even though it annoyed the living crap out of me sometimes with the amount of side bullshit it had. Like, I will never forget Jeff telling me, like, have you got to this point yet? I'm like, no, but I'm nearly there. He's like, when you get there, let me know how many side quests pop up. And I was just like, okay. And oh my God, you know this point. It's right at the end.
Yeah.
It's just an avalanche of like side quests just before the end. And you're like, why have they done this to me?
I'm there with you. I was Archer ticking all side quests, despite some of them being horrendous. I just couldn't pull myself away. I had to do them. And then I reached that point.
At the same time, some of them are horrendous, and they truly are. But they pay off in the most spectacular ways at the end, because they round out. It is almost unbelievable that some of the character arcs are resigned to
side quests
because they are so good. They are so... If you just played the main quest, you'd be like, wow, there was no closure for like half my party. It's like, yeah, because it's in the fucking side quests. Like, it's insane.
That blacksmith just seems pissed the whole time. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, geez, so weird. Just straight. Wonder what happened to Jill. Damn. Yeah. Like, it's strange. Like, this game is so strange. And again, I come back to this idea that Final Fantasy seems to be shooting for the stars. And yes, it is not going to reach it every time, but you have to just admire what it does in trying that. And I'm all in on Square Enix continually going, you know, going down this path and going through this route and this process, because the games they're producing as a result are just so phenomenal and so just so memorable. Yeah. 16, I get, like, a lot of people have issue with it because it's so scaled back in terms of role playing, and it is. It's a character action game. And even then, if you just call it a character action game, it's a very weird one. In that regard, barely a character action game. So it's like barely both. But at the same time, it's like kind of cool because, hey, their combat is stylish as hell and it looks fantastic. And swapping between all of these powers and icons is really, really fun. And yes, the icon battles are simplistic mechanically, but fuck, they look incredible. They just look so good.
And they're just fun to play as well. I mean, sorry.
Yeah, they're an anime episode that you are like playing out. They remind me a lot of Azura's Wrath, which came out like 2010, I think, which is take every icon battle and just make a game from that. And that's Azura's Wrath. So I was just like, hell yeah, I'm into this. It's so good. It has a bad final act, but when the credits rolled, I was like, it felt like something was empty inside of me. And I just, it's a game that I'm going to think about for a long time. So that's why it's on this list. It's great.
Good boys, Clive and Torgal. I mean,
oof. Oh, Ben Starr. Bless that man.
You're right. This is where we start overlapping. My number three now, Resident Evil 4 Remake.
Get out of here.
I'm not going to spend too much time talking about it, because I think you hit the nail on the head. And I think the best way you explained it is that there's almost, for better or worse, this, I use the word baggage, it's not baggage, but people will look at Resident Evil 4 Remake and go, oh, but it's a remake of one of the best games ever made. You know, how could it be a flop? But then you have to remember that they could have done so much wrong. It could have gone, it could have just been horrific. But
I mean, you'd only have to look at Remake 3 for how things can go awry, according to some people. Yeah. I think it's great, but a lot of people seem to think that Remake sucks. But yeah.
If so. In a timeline where the original Resident Evil 4 doesn't exist and Remake 4 came out, wouldn't be called Remake 4, but we're getting into semantics here. If it came out just as its own unique Resident Evil in 2023, it would have stood head and shoulders above all other games this year, regardless. It's just from beginning to end, it is a fantastic survival horror game. And like, I suppose in terms of survival horror, Resident Evil 4 has always been, you know, not as scary as others, I guess, it came before it. But just the way they've used modern gaming technology in terms of lighting and pacing and how they've stitched the levels together and how they've learned to sort of marry the old ideas with modern sensibilities. It's just, what a great package. I'm scared for Capcom, because at some stage they're gonna have one not hit and it's gonna be very sad. But I'm gonna enjoy riding this high that they've got. Resident Evil's never been in a better space, and Resident Evil 4 Remake, I think it's exactly what you said. It's this perfect balance of, it is so cheesy, but it's still simultaneously serious. And you just know it's Resident Evil. That is the DNA of this franchise, and I'm there for it. So yeah, love Remake 4.
I really do want, like you're saying, at some point there's going to be a misstep. Like, I think Resident Evil 9's got the benefit of a clean slate ahead of it because, like, Ethan and that whole story's done. The remake stuff, now, that's where I think things get tricky because it's like, everyone's like, oh, do Code Veronica. They're not going to, they're going to do 5 and that's...
They're going to do 1, I'm telling you. They're going to remake the original.
Okay, that would be a 10 out of 10 move, and I think they should do that.
It'll be a meme in itself because they've remade one, but people forget
it's fine, but give me one in the vein of an RE4, and I'm fucking there,
but
man.
People say, like, no, they've remade one already. I mean, even this in itself as well, they remade one, like, 6 years
20 years
after.
Ago.
Like, it wasn't that long after they went, oh, we're going to remake this game. It's been long enough. It's been like 20 years.
It's true. It's true. I think I've said in the past that they've remade one as a sort of like argument against. I think one is the correct way to go. I don't know if they will do that, but I would love it. It would be great. Let me just tell you, if they do not remake one and you are sad about this, go play the current remake. It's good.
It's still good, yeah.
It is totally playable now. And yes, it's got the tank controls. It feels great. I played it for the first time, I think it was last year, actually. It's fucking phenomenal. It's a great game still. So go do that.
Super spooky. What is your number three?
More overlap. Hooray.
Bizarre.
My number three is Hi-Fi Rush. I said... At the beginning of this year, it would be a miracle if this game did not make my top 5, and lo and behold,
there we are.
No miracles exist yet, so it's in my top 5, I guess.
In the year that was 2023, no miracles exist.
There's no water to wine in this household, no.
Wow.
I mean, just kind of echoing what you said, Hi-Fi Rush dropped... kind of out of nowhere at a pretty good time of the year because it was quite quiet at that point. It was like a month before RE4, so, or a bit more. I think RE4 got pushed back, whatever.
It was Feb, just early in the year.
So there was nothing going on. And then, you know, immediately after a shadow drop, there were people on Twitter being like, oh, there is something here. Because the first trailer for the game was kind of like, that looks okay.
Yeah.
And as soon as like there was this hype, I was like, I got nothing else to do. Let's give it a go. And engrossed, like, from the get-go.
Hi-Fi Rush.
Hey. Almost like you're a copywriter.
Where was I in
February? it's just a phenomenal game, I think. I think, like you said, Tango Gameworks, I know the current lead of the studio, this is the game he's always wanted to make. And it's really cool that he got to make it while, you know... Shinji Mikami was still there, who was overseeing it. And I think it just kind of shows perhaps the new trajectory or the future of Tango Gameworks, you know, now that Shinji Mikami has left, that they don't have to be the horror studio. They don't have to be burdened by, we are led by the Resident Evil creator, so we must make similar experiences, you know what I mean? I don't know if this means that they continue in that direction or they do something completely different under Microsoft, but... I think there's been enough buzz around Hi-Fi Rush that this is something that won't go away. And I'm hopeful that it doesn't because it's just it was a very positivity forward, very fun, very I am a video game sort of game. A very unserious but hopeful story. Really, really tight mechanics with just really cool flares, you know, here or there, like the way the environment around you would move to the tempo of the music so that everywhere you looked, you were reminded of the current beat that you were meant to be like, you know, sticking to. But also a game that was like kind of like ultra forgiving of like, hey, if you are really bad at rhythm, you're not going to completely suck shit at this game. It's just going to be a bit different, you know?
Yeah.
And then I think just the most memorable boss fight of the year, hands down, in Rockfoot. Like Rockfoot is just, I get goosebumps thinking about that fight. It was, my jaw was on the floor like after that. It was,
I think
what a game.
Like definitely the highlights, boss fights of the game. But I think so many of those boss fights were, I got excited. I was like, who's the next boss? Like, what is their musical number going to be? What is the stage going to do?
What is their catch? Yeah, because every single one was unique in a very cool way. And it's a great game. Like that game lives and breathes on its music. And I think the licensed OST is just solid. It's got like Nine Inch Nails, it's got Black Keys, it's got The Prodigy, like just a really good assortment of tracks from a lot of good musicians. And I think used in very good, effective ways, not just there for like, oh, this is a cool song, you know.
Shits and giggles.
Hey, great game that.
Really good. And yeah, I think it would be a sin to not see more of it in some form in future.
Yeah, whether it's a sequel or something, I just hope they don't go the route of like, oh, this did well, let's expand on it by making a 20-hour game. Like, no, we don't need that. Like, this thing was like perfectly paced. It was like, what, 6 or 7 hours?
Maybe
that's all it needs
bit
to be.
Longer. Yeah. I don't know. I can't remember, but it wasn't too long. Like 8-ish, maybe? I don't know.
Oh, my records say 10. Okay, maybe 10. 10 was good. I felt like it didn't overstay its welcome, but I also felt like it ended when it needed to. You know, it made a natural progression and that it felt good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a good game. Great game.
Fantastic game.
Xbox had to get one banger this year, you know.
Oh, yes. Is 2024 the year that they actually get banger after banger? I feel like we've said this for years Jesus now, but I feel
forever.
I feel that we are getting there, but we'll see.
It's funny though that the hands down the best Xbox game of the year was the game no one knew about when the year started.
I don't see Starfield on either of our lists anywhere.
It wasn't even Starfield in my honorable mentions.
It's like it's okay.
Listen.
My number two is. Sorry, I'm busy time stamping. Yes, multitasking. My number two is something which I did not expect to make my top five for a number of reasons, and that is Alan Wake 2. And the reason I didn't expect it to make a top five is purely because I liked Alan Wake enough. I played it. It was cool. I mean, I played Alan Wake, I don't know, 5-6 years after its heyday. I was like, this is pretty cool. Played Control, absolutely loved Control. Saw the news for Alan Wake 2 and I was like, yeah, like I'll play it. I mean, it's more Alan Wake. I enjoyed it and sort of just cast it out of my mind until it launched, at which point people are like, holy shit, this is Remedy have done something truly spectacular here. And while I haven't rolled credits in the game myself, I have played 16 hours, which I will say I've inhaled in the last, I don't know, week, 7 to 10 days. I've just been playing hour after hour of this game. Whenever I can sit down and get a stretch of time to play, even over lunches, I'm playing Alan Wake 2.
Damn.
Because it is just an expertly crafted, phenomenal game. It's just like Alan Wake 1, I think it was definitely like survival horror, but I've never thought of that game as being scary necessarily.
Yeah.
Like I know people go like, oh, Alan Wake 2 was so tense and moody and like very spooky. And I'm like, I don't remember being scared of it at all. It was like, yeah, you kind of figure out the mechanics and you kind of just go with it, you know?
It's Alan more Wake, like an action game than anything else.
Yeah. Alan Wake 2 has me on the edge of my seat for the wrong reasons because they just insert, and like I say, they insert jump scares. It's not done like, ha, like, fuck you. It's intentionally done and like, you know what's happened or it catches you by surprise. And there's only been one instance I told you, I was like, I hate you guys. Like that is unexpected. But it's a game I cannot put down despite me being like on the edge of my seat, wondering like what is around the next corner. And the jump scares themselves don't necessarily come from the monsters you're fighting. Like while there are moments there, it's more just the environment, like the sound design, how the environments are designed in terms of lighting and framing. If you don't know anything about the game, you play as two protagonists, Alan Wake and a new character called Saga. And there are often times in the game where you can kind of see the realities overlap a bit. And just the way it's done is just, it's unreal. And there's one specific part in the game where, no spoilers, but it is the equivalent of Control's Astral Maze. It is just a moment that defines this game, and I worry for Remedy because I think, I know you've done the Astral Maze, you've done this now people are going to expect this sort of highlight or thing from every game moving forward. They're not scared to experiment with the medium of gaming, and I really love them for that. Alan Wake 2 is just, it's just a truly special game, and I'm very keen to keep playing it and see where it ends. Really, really good.
Yeah, it's a thing that I wish I played more of before you know, before we made this list, because I definitely think it would have made my list. And for all the reasons you've said, it feels like a different spin on survival horror, while also, you know, learning from, I think, it feels like Resident Evil 4 in so many ways.
Yeah.
In terms of like the way you move, the way you manage your inventory, the way, but then at the same time, it's like it uses the medium in such a different way to instill horror that I've never seen before. Like Control had these moments of like FMV being stitched into like the game world and using it very, very uniquely. And I think that's like a Remedy trademark now. And it's very easy, I think, for them to like go overboard with that sort of stuff.
Mm.
But so far in Alan Wake 2, they're using it in ways that are just like really, really smart. And I can't remember where I heard this, but someone said that Alan Wake 2 is sort of like, it's that example you keep hearing about where this only works because it's a video game. That is the only reason it works. Mm. And like, you will absolutely in a few years see this being tried to be adapted into a TV series. And hey, it might still be good, but it will need to be changed for that. The way this story is being told only works in a video game. Whereas something like The Last of Us is very easily transplanted onto TV because The Last of Us is actually cinematic, really a TV show that you're just playing through. This is a video game first, and it would not work in the same ways if it wasn't a video game. So, and I think that's very true. And that's not to say that all video games have to do that. I just think Remedy are thinking in a very different way when it comes to this. And it's cool that we have a studio like them around.
I think just game of the year discussions in general, like the games that stand out on top are those that you just know when you're playing it. There's just the level of quality and narrative and mechanics, it just feels like it's on a different level. There's an element of polish to it. And for lack of a better description, like you mentioned, Alan Wake 2 feels a lot like Resident Evil 4 remake. I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure that took inspiration from it in terms of you know, how ammo works, inventory, the quick slot stuff. I'm like, that feels so like Resident Evil. But then I feel that this is a horrible description, but I feel that it gets my point across. Like, I feel that they took Resident Evil 4 remake, the survival horror, and married that with the cinematic flair and polish of something like The Last of Us, and they had a baby. That is Alan Wake 2, where it is just that level of exceptional quality and storytelling with survival horror mechanics, and it's an unreal game. It's so good. And I don't know what the ending is. I don't know how they stick it or what it is, but after my time with it, it's my number two. It is just a really, really great game from them. And I think the studio, it's wild to me to think that when I was much younger, I played Max Payne 1 and 2, and I thought, man, these are great games. And then they moved on to Quantum Break, they did Alan Wake. I played Alan Wake. And then they moved on to Quantum Break. I was like, oh, like Remedy are cool, but they're like a sort of middle of the road studio. Like, I'd never think of them as the top studio or one of the top studios in the world. Then Control comes along and you go, man, okay, these dudes seem to know what they're doing. Like, they're putting out these really quality games. Now they've got Alan Wake 2, and I just wonder, like, what is the next thing for them? Like, we know they're making more Control games, but I'm excited for what their next projects are, because they've now established, like, hey, we are good at what we do. Like, we are a powerhouse. Like, I'd put them up there, maybe not as high as the likes of a Naughty Dog, but they're definitely up there with the best of the best.
Oh, for sure. I think we are in a timeline where it is great that they weren't acquired at any point, because I think for a long time, it was close. I mean, I'm almost certain there were conversations at Microsoft prior to Quantum Break coming out for that to happen. And I think having Remedy independent, sure. I mean, it makes their lives harder because, you know, money is a tight thing. But like, I don't think they would be doing what they do today under a publisher. No. I mean, their plans for the future are pretty expansive, and I'm like super keen to see what they do. I'm also just like stoked that they are one of the few developers still making their own engine. I know how hard that must be to maintain, but like Alan Wake 2 is one of the most visually like incredible games I've ever seen. It really is something to behold.
At some stage.
Yeah, I need to try this on PC. It is like mind-blowing how good this game looks. So I'm just like, ooh, a Max Payne 1 remake using this technology? Yeah, yep, I'm fucking in. Nah, it's a great, great game. Can't wait to play more.
Mm. What is your number two?
My number two.
Nah, no, I'm gonna you know your you, top two. You no, nah, I know what your top two are. I'm curious to see which one is where.
Yeah. So number two is Cocoon for sure, which means we probably share a number
Get
one
out.
Again.
Tell me about
yeah. Cocoon. Cocoon is like. Cocoon you could describe as complete sandy bait. It is absolutely the sort of game that I will always play. It is the sort of game that will always win me over because I love little puzzle games that every 30 seconds make me go, how the fuck did they do that? Like, you know, I'm by no means a video game developer anymore, but I have that side of my brain and
you've had the curtain pulled back, you know.
I can acknowledge when something happens in a game that I go, fuck, that must have taken a lot of time. Like that must have been so complicated to figure out. And Cocoon is like a 4-hour demo of that. It's like every little thing is just like, holy shit, how did you think that was even possible? Like it's just a phenomenal little puzzle game with no dialogue, no real like explicit story. I sort of understand what happened
something
at the end.
Happened
I don't
there,
know yeah something happened at head. The end but just an escalating cascade of really good puzzles that actually build on one another like really intelligently. I think it's one of the rare puzzle games that teaches you without teaching you anything. It teaches you through doing, which I think is one of the hardest things. It's the sort of thing that if you've never tried to do it yourself, you don't understand how difficult that is. And you don't understand how difficult it is to assume the intelligence of your players from a wide berth of players. And I think it does that incredibly, incredibly well.
Yeah.
And I just think it holds one of my favorite moments of the year where you've got your three little orbs, your three little spheres that represent the three worlds you can go into, and you're actually like cascading into them. So you've got one within another, but then you're doing one at like the bottom level. And the effect of that is like bubbling up through all of them and then affecting something right at the top. It is just when one of those things, I tried something and I was like, this can't be the solution. There's no way that the game actually knows that this is possible. And when it fucking
worked.
I was like, are you, I like paused and I dropped the controller. I was like, there's no, holy shit, that is so cool. Cool little moment. Like, I could not believe that that little thought, it had been like acknowledged and thought of. It was so good. It's a brilliant little game. 4 hours as well. It's on Game Pass. Like, just take an afternoon and enjoy.
Yeah.
Like, game design at its finest, I think.
I think even on that, like, I haven't had the curtain pulled back on game design. I acknowledge games are black magic and they work. But where I always am astounded by is that where games blow me away like this, but the fact that they have been so carefully designed that there's like no obvious way to break them. There's no fail state.
Yes.
Where Cocoon is, there's all these layers. And I kept thinking like, oh my God, how am I going to keep track of this? Like, what if I go off the beaten path and then I'm stuck somewhere trying to find a solution and it's not where I'm meant to be? That never happens. They always keep you exactly where you need to be. Like, within reason, they don't put you in one little arena and say, ha, figure it out. There's just a general area and you know, like, okay, I know I need to do something here. And at no point do they explicitly type out like, hey, it's communicated exactly how you said of, there's such a careful balance of, you need to figure out how to teach your player and you need to keep in mind, you know, what do they know? What can they assume? And you have to find this balance between everything. And I feel that they've just, they ticked that box through the whole game, because at no point was I in the wrong place. I always had to be exactly where I needed to be, and I knew where I had to do something. the only thing I had to do was worry about how to actually do it, not am I in the right place. And that to me,
yes,
that blows my mind. Like all the layer stuff, incredible, don't get me wrong. But it's the same sort of praise I've given to a game like Metroid Dread, where that world is so expansive, but they always put you exactly where you need to be. And I just can't fathom the level of problem solving and just logistics to pull that off. That just blows my mind.
I think that sort of thing is so much trial and error. Like the amount of times I think Cocoon must have gone through playtesting.
Oh my gosh.
And like very, very rigorous looking at where are the pain points, where are people getting stuck, where how do I design this better? Because I don't, that's the sort of thing that only that is perfected to that degree that Cocoon gets it through iteration. Mm. And the attention to get that right. I mean, this game took 6 years to make. Like it shows a dedication to that craft. And I think that's why it stands out so much, because like there are so few games held to this standard of quality nowadays. Not through like laziness or anything. It's just, you know, time is money as well. So like to have the patience and also the faith that what you're doing is the right decision is like, yeah, I think that's why. I think also the game just respects its player in ways that I haven't seen in a long time, where it doesn't spoon feed you things. It expects you to get things. So it expects a level of perception from you, but then rewards like clever thinking. Like there is this moment where, you know, those little, they're these like sentries that rotate backwards and forwards, and they'll like gobble up your little drone that can unlock things.
Yeah.
And I remember this one point where I had the drone and I was standing at the edge and I was seeing this thing going backwards and forwards. And I was like, there's a point where I can like eject myself from the sphere in the middle, but surely that won't, you know, help me, because then I can't see where this thing is. And I was like, let me just give it a go. And I threw myself out and I was like, well, now I've got to like, guess, I don't know if this world is reset or whatever. And as I'm thinking this, in the reflection of the pool where the sphere is, I can see the thing moving backwards and forwards. It's like, oh, it knows exactly what I was going to think by trying this. It's telling me, don't worry, you've got this information. You can make the correct decision. Like,
also, the fact that it shows that those worlds exist within each other. It's not like the one pauses while you're in another one.
Exactly. They're constantly, their state is constantly in motion. And
That's utter wild nonsense. Where
it's real magic
level of planning. Where I think, I mean, we're getting off the beaten path, but even Outer Wilds is a good example of that. That game is curated to such a degree of things have to happen at a certain time. But how do you communicate that to players? How do you let them discover it? And they did it. I don't know.
And your changes have to be encapsulated in that as well.
Actual black magic games like that. And I think that's why they're so memorable, because, I mean, Cocoon's one of those where you sit and you go, holy shit, like, how did you do this? It's insane.
No, that's exactly it. I think Outer Wilds is the perfect other example of that recently, is like, how did you, you know, you had this idea.
All of this,
and it's great you had this idea, but how did you actually execute on this idea? It's mind blowing.
Get it to run really on Switch.
Good luck.
It's a whole nother discussion.
I'm just glad that. So this is the guy who made Cocoon is former lead designer at Playdead, the Inside and Limbo Peeps. So now I'm like zeroed in on his name, on his new studio. Like I will play whatever the studio makes next. 100%.
In 6 years time.
Yeah, fuck. I'll play it. I'll be there.
Nice. Well, this brings us to our number one, which
is shared, I assume, at this point. It has to be.
If it's not shared, I'm going to laugh, but it has to be shared. It's Tears of the Kingdom.
It has to be.
Correct.
I lied. Last year, we didn't share it. We had different ones last year.
But our lists often are very close to each other. The one year we did share was Chicory, where that was a left field, unexpected.
That's correct. Yeah. Game. We shared Breath of the Wild year as well.
I'm sure.
No, wait. Did we even have a podcast then? Probably
I'm
not.
Sure we
no.
did.
Maybe. No, I think we started in 2018, so right. I don't think we did.
It would have been. It would have been. If
it would have been. But yes, The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom,
Checkpoint
is number one.
Game of the year.
Fuck, who would have guessed?
Which
damn.
Might surprise you, might not, but I will tell you, it's not surprising. Like, I think we knew Tears of the Kingdom would be something special, but it is, it did have the danger of it's a sequel to Breath of the Wild. Breath of the Wild, called by many one of the best games ever made. How do you follow that? How, just what does the sequel for that even look like? And then even then, in getting closer to release, people kind of go, oh, but it's the same world. And like, what are they going to do? And then all Nintendo did was they went, you know what? Forget all the tools you had in Breath of the Wild. They're gone. We're going to give you new tools and you're going to live in the same world.
Yep.
And it's going to change in certain ways. But here's a sequel. And man, is this sequel really good? Even from so many levels, which we'll discuss. But like, I think the most obvious one is, well, not the most obvious one, but the one that we'll probably touch on just talking about Cocoon and all these other marvels that shouldn't exist. The fact that this game lets you think up kind of whatever you want and build it, and it actually lets you do it on a Switch, is just,
and the physics around that,
and the physics around it, and your Switch doesn't just melt in your hands when it
doesn't implode.
I don't know what Nintendo engineers did to pull that off, but they've pulled it off. Unreal.
It's weird because the sort of things I said about Spider-Man 2, about it being a bit more of a known quantity and it not being surprising, I definitely think I can apply to my feelings of Tears of the Kingdom, where it is like, yes, this is the same game I've played before, and it's not, it doesn't have the same sort of spell on me that Breath of the Wild had, because I think Breath of the Wild was like new console, a brand novel, new way to play Zelda. But this is just, it's still like one of the most reliable experiences I go back to just for like a comfort and just complete pure exploration without even realizing it. Like setting myself a goal, being like, I'm going to do this. And then 3 hours later realizing I got nowhere near that because I was just like, oh, what's that? Oh, what's that? Oh, what's that? You know, and for it to do that in a world where I've already done that for like 100 hours is kind of insane to me, because I really thought it would be like, oh shit, I don't actually want to do this all over again. But I think the world has changed enough. I think the underground is pretty cool, and I think the sky islands are actually my favorites. I just love fucking around in the sky. But like you said, the building is the big part of this, and it took me a while to get kind of comfortable with it. I thought it was a bit finicky at first, and I still am building the most rudimentary basic things because I like just getting around the way I get around. But I like that the game allows you to do that. It isn't like you will use these tools and you will use them in the way we told them, you told them to.
Even on that, it's the building for the most part is completely optional. I say like you, there will be puzzles, you'll have to use the building, but at no point is it going like, oh no, you're going to fight this enemy and don't you not come with the motorcycle and a laser beam on the end, else you're going to die. It's like, no, you can, if you want to, if you want to take the time to do that, you can shoot rockets at the enemy if you want. Like, you can do the most dumb, stupid thing, or you can be the biggest genius on the planet. It'll work. And I think that's why Breath of the Wild also stands out as one of those aha games, because even that, like, one of my favorite examples is there's a shrine where you basically have to complete a circuit, and in the shrine there are these two metal balls, you've got to carry them and they've got to touch.
That was a dungeon.
And it was just like a random Twitter clip where some person went, what if I just put all my swords on the ground and connected
They're conductive.
And it worked. It just, the way this game is built is that there's a set of rules that caters to whatever the hell you can think up, and it'll work. And I think it's such a huge gamble in the sequel here, because you think Breath of the Wild, it's such a wild thing to say. It seems limited in comparison, even though Breath of the Wild is like a phenomenal game. But the tools in that seem so like rudimentary compared to what you've got in Tears of the Kingdom.
Absolutely.
To give players these tools of like, you can pick up anything and stick it to anything, and you can do these things, and you can rewind, and you can have all these things happening at any time. To give that to players and it still works, it's just, I don't know. Somebody at some point must have in a boardroom gone like, can we do that? Are we not going to like break consoles, or we're not going to like fuck up and let players down thinking they can do something and they find out they can't? And
But you're right. It's this game of like endless possibility, because there's still somehow, again, you know, people bemoan the fact that it's back to the same place, back to the same, you know, sort of simulation mechanics. So, but there's still stuff I'm seeing online where I'm like, holy fuck, you can do that? Like you can actually pull that off. And that comes with a lot of those new powers, like people using rewind in like these ridiculous ways where they can like revert projectiles back to enemies, or using the build mechanics to build these contraptions that kill bosses in like seconds. And it's just like really, really cool. But then at the same time, I think Tears of the Kingdom improves on Breath of the Wild in the areas that I think a lot of people felt Breath of the Wild was lacking, where the divine beasts in Breath of the Wild or their pseudo dungeons weren't, you know, typical dungeons. They were very short. They were quite simple.
Yeah.
I quite liked them because they were just neat, I thought. But, you know, Tears of the Kingdom goes back to the more traditional Zelda dungeons, but obviously still lets you operate within them with the same sort of freedom that the world allows for. And I think that's a really difficult thing to balance. And I think they pulled it off in all of the dungeons. I think that that Rito dungeon, the wind one, is like a incredible set piece, especially that boss fight. So it still has those moments outside of just the raw exploration and stuff that we've come to expect to be brilliant now from a Zelda game.
Yeah. Also, I've not rolled credits in this game.
Neither. Same.
I've played, I think, my Nintendo clock. It must be like 100 hours or so. And
mine's on 60 or so.
While I've probably like uncovered 75% of the map, I know there's still so much to do. And like I've picked it up again recently after having finished Mario Wonder, and I'm back in it. I'm just Archer exploring, going off the beaten path, ticking off shrines, and just having the best time doing it. It is.
Yeah.
This is one of those things where when you finish Breath of the Wild, you go, wow, how will they follow this? And then now I'm going to finish Tears of the Kingdom and be like, wow, what's next for Zelda?
I genuinely like, don't know what they do next. It's the game that I felt weirdly. What's the last open world game you knew you played that you could just come back to and feel like you could pick it up immediately and know what was going on? Because I tell you this much, if you had to try that with Horizon Forbidden West, fucking luck.
I don't mean to bash on Horizon because it's not Horizon's fault, but went back to the DLC this year, started the DLC, and I was like, I cannot remember how to play this game.
Same.
Absolutely. And that game just straight up does not give a shit either.
It's like, how do I? It does not care.
How do I grapple again? How do I pull it? Just no clue.
Zelda, it's like you pop in and you're like, oh yeah, cool, got it. Yeah. I remember what I was doing. Yeah.
On that, I think it is worth pointing out that games, you know, Elden Ring being an exception, I think what Elden Ring did so well is give players that, well, at least to me, and I think many other players, that feeling, that Breath of the Wild, that of like, you don't have to go to an objective marker. It's like, you can do whatever the hell you want. I don't know many other games that have mimicked that and pulled it off, or even tried, because it's a very difficult thing to do, I feel.
I think that is what's quite incredible as well, is that, you know, when Breath of the Wild came out in 2017.
Yeah.
Wow.
6 years old. Can you believe it?
Yeah. Immediately people then were like, oh, this is the new template for open world games that, you know, the industry is going to follow because of how successful it is.
Have you played that follow exactly that?
There's literally Elden Ring, the only one that took some lessons from that. And that's not to say that open world games have to.
No.
I just think that, you know, last year Forbidden West came out and this year its DLC came out, and it just shows like a lack of ambition in making your open world better, I think, and sticking to the tried and tested, like, cookie cutter, like, go here, go there, go there. And Tears of the Kingdom can come out and not radically change the formula that Breath of the Wild established and still feel absolutely new in terms of being top tier in terms of exploration and discovery, and just an exceptional game when it comes to there always being something in your periphery that is interesting.
Yeah.
And I think that is not by accident. That definitely isn't by accident. That's by very careful design.
Yeah.
And I think even though you're operating in a world of, you know, expected, you know, you've been here, you know what to expect. They've changed it enough or kept new things in there enough that those discoveries still feel genuine and fresh and worth seeking out.
Yeah. I think last thing I'll say, because else we're going to never shut up about this game, which happens, is that I think anytime I talk to somebody who's not played Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom and they say, like, what is it about the game? I think I always come back to the fact that it feels, and it's such a, get a ridiculous thing to say, but it feels like every inch of this world is handcrafted. Where it is, like, you know, you'll walk to some beach in the corner of the map, but some designer or somebody on that on that Zelda team looked at that and went, okay, if players are here, what can I give them to do? It's like, oh, there's a cave there. Oh, there's an NPC there. Oh, there's a shrine here, whatever. There's always something. And even over and above that, it's a thing of like, okay, you climb onto a mountain. What do you see? Like, you always have some other thing in your point of view, and that is 100% by design. Like, I firmly believe somebody sat down and went like, huh, okay, we've got this mountain here. What can we do to like make it stand out? And you have that across this huge map across two games now. And I think the reason people struggle to replicate that, because I think it takes a lot of time and effort to do that.
Yeah, 100%.
So, you know, people will bash Tears of the Kingdom saying, wow, that came out 6 years after the original and it's the same map. It's like, well, because maybe they used those 6 years to not only a problem solve these new mechanics they put in, but you know, make sure the world feels alive in different ways. It doesn't, you don't have to have a world with thousands of busting people. You know, the world feels alive in things you do. Like, you know, you can go to a city hub and talk to a person, or you can go off the beaten path and have things to see and do. That's what makes a world feel alive to me.
Yeah,
in gaming. And these Zelda games just tick those in spades.
And make those discoveries feel natural. When you find something or find someone out in the open world, you're never questioning, like, have they always been here? You know, they kind of envelop them in a way that makes it seem like, oh, you've just caught them on their path somewhere. Like, they would have been at another place had you come, you know, later. This is a genuine discovery you've made.
Even more mind-boggling is that you bumped that person, and it's somebody you bumped into like 20 hours earlier. And they react to you. They say, oh, did you ever find... And I'm like, what the hell?
They acknowledge it,
How did
it's nuts.
Nintendo, how did you plan for this? Like, how did you do
it's,
this?
It's really nuts. And then you eventually get to that moment where you, like, open your third eye. And because you, like, experienced how the world is working, how they're placing things, you can kind of predict where things are going to be. Like, if, like, your analogy of being on top of a mountain, being like, there must be something interesting there. You go there and there absolutely is. It's like, okay, I understand how they're doing, where they're placing these things, where they, and it just feels cool because you start like understanding the language of this world in a very natural way, as opposed to like, I went here because the marker was on my map. Like,
it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's great. It's a great game. It's just, it's a really, really good game. And yes, neither of us finished it, but we're saying it's the best game of the year because it's game I'll go back to. I still love going back to it. It's good. It's a real good game. Okay. And I still think there are moments in there that are incredibly special that I can't wait to see. So,
Cool. That's it. That's our game of the year. But we're not done because we have... let me make a note here because I forgot to make a note. It's not questions. We have submissions from all of you. I put out a little social post saying, hey, listeners, let us hear your games of the year. And somebody did ask, like, does it have to be a game from this year? And I said, no. I've had game of the year discussions with you where I've put things on there that weren't released that year. Outer Wilds being a good example. I played that how many years after it launched, and it was one of my game of the year picks at a stage. So we have over on Twitter, the interface is getting me, from good pal and listener at Jared Brapra, who says, number one, the refreshed Battlefield 2042. I have heard good things. That, you know, that game's in a much better space as opposed to when it launched. Then number two, Hi-Fi Rush. Good choice. We both had that on our top five. And then number three, not Starfield. Hate to see it.
Absolutely hate to see it.
On Instagram, we also have a response from Best_Bash, who says, Baldur's Gate, Tears of the Kingdom, Final Fantasy 16, Monster Hunter World. And have you heard of this game, Suika Game? S-U-I-K-A?
Oh, yeah, that's the watermelon game.
Watermelon game.
I
need to play this game. I've seen so many people hooked on it.
You can play it for free on your browser.
What? Okay, I did not know that.
Yeah, it's free on the browser, and then it's like $3 on Steam or something. I mean, on Switch. Yeah. So. Yeah. And it's got 1 bajillion ripoffs on iOS. None of them are official.
You did put you in brackets, mindless obsession. I mean.
Yeah, I've only heard good things about that game, so.
Sorry, over on...
These are good lists. These are good lists. Good list.
Over on Twitter, we have... sorry, let me just scroll down. We have a lot of spam on Twitter from not listeners, which is just annoying.
Oh, really? Some
bots just doing their thing, yeah.
Knew it.
We have a response from Abe_Wilson who said their top three this year is Alan Wake Remastered, Control, and Head and Shoulders Above Everything Else, Baldur's Gate 3. No shock.
Sure. You got so close to the trifecta of Remedy games there.
But it was Alan Wake to be like, whoa, this person is...
Yeah, I'd be like, damn, you caught up on a Remedy catalog. Yeah. So we got two Baldur's Gates tops. What was Jared's? I forgot.
Not Starfield. It was Half-Hour Rush and Battlefield 2042.
That's right. Okay. That's right. Half-Hour Rush, banger.
Another list from Miles _ away from Down Under in Australia, number one. Well, this is they're not numbered. There's just a top three here. Cocoon.
Okay.
Half-Hour Rush and Thirsty Suitors, which I have heard.
Oh, that is a game I've been meaning to play, actually. Yeah. Funny enough, all of those are Game Pass games. Your own Game Pass, yeah.
And then last, he did say, shout out to Stray Gods. It wasn't quite there, but loved the concept. What is Stray Gods?
Yeah, I've heard of that. Stray Gods is like a narrative sort of game. It had Troy Baker and a bunch of other big actors were in it, if I'm not mistaken. Stray Gods.
And then...
it's a role-playing musical. That's what it is.
Interesting. Yeah. Let's have a look. And then this one makes me laugh because... At work this week, good pal John Michael just DMs me and says, hey, do you still need top games for the podcast?
Said, sure, yes. Taking the inside route.
He said, we haven't recorded that episode yet. He said, cool, here's mine. not listed, but Armor Core 6, which I still need to get to.
Yeah, that's a game I need to get to, yeah. That's one.
Dredge, which is another indie title. Oh, but you played Dredge. You enjoyed it, hey?
Yeah. I reviewed Dredge for GameSpot. I enjoyed Dredge. It has some like niggling issues with me, but I think it's a really good spooky fishing game, which is a like weird combo. But I think it's got some excellent atmosphere. Yeah, and good Lovecraftian vibes. Do enjoy it.
And then last one, a Cyberpunk DLC.
Another thing I want to get to. Yeah. A lot of people saying Phantom Pain. Yeah, Phantom Pain. Phantom Liberty, sorry, not the Phantom Pain. That's another game. The Phantom Liberty is something. I actually watched GameSpot's documentary about that. It's a good watch. Very insightful comments from a lot of people around CDPR around like the difficulty of these 2077 launch and what they learned from that. Interesting things in there. So also watch the Half-Life docu. That is a great documentary.
It's fantastic.
So good. Fantastic. It's just so expertly done as
just
well.
Also
what a
reminds
great documentary.
Me that games are black magic. The fact that Half-Life exists.
And also just like the sort of shit that some people did that was like that all of the sound effects and the entire OST was done by one guy. And he had never done any of that in his life before.
One person did
fucking insane?
One person did all the textures. That blew my mind.
Yeah, that is what I was just like, what? This
game is huge. How did you do that?
People making games then were built different. That's like kind of the one thing from the documentary that I think is kind of glossed over. It's like, they do talk about it eventually, but they're like, yeah, we crunched. And it's like, no, you guys fucking crunched like for a year solid.
So we're getting off the beaten path here, but Valve released a Half-Life documentary to mark the 25-year anniversary of the game. And we won't go to spoilers, but I will say it starts out where it is Gabe Newell and what's the other founder's name? I can't think of his name.
Mike.
It's just gone from me. They both employees at Microsoft, and they both just went, let's form a game company. And they just had a team of people.
Basically.
And I'm like, how do you do that? How do you quit your job and you pay a whole team of people and you've never shipped a game before? Games are black magic.
The risks.
They really are. Yeah. Oh, sorry. John Michael Michael did have some bonus games. He said, also, Seika game on the Switch.
Watermelon game.
And I presume this is a cooking game, and I hope I said right. It's cuisine.
like
cuisine.
Kitchen in Portuguese.
No, like cuisine, like food. Cuisine. Cuisine.
Yeah.
But cuisine, like, you know, like a. I can't explain it. I'm assuming it's a cooking game because John Michael Michael likes playing simulator games.
I'm just saying, in Portuguese, kitchen is cuisine. Like cuisine, so.
Isn't it a...
Could be that.
Isn't a small thing also like a cuisine? No.
No, that's a pick a...
Ah.
Picanina is small. So
that's
I don't
not
know.
All what I'm saying, so whatever.
No, clearly not. It's...
Well, there you go. That is our game of
the
year.
There you go. There's your short little episode. Duolingo lesson at the end of our game of the year.
Best. We had the best time.
Thank you so much to all of you who sent in lists. That was really cool. I think we can safely say that Baldur's Gate is definitely something that we both need to play. I hope I enjoy it because I really have not enjoyed CRPGs in the past, including Larian's own game. Not because they're bad. They're just not my sort of game. We'll see. Baldur's Gate seems to be the one that everyone gets into, so we'll see. Armored Core 6 as well is another one I want to give a go. Thank you for all of the lists. And just in general, I think to everyone who has listened throughout this year, it's been a bit of a tumultuous year for both Matty and I, very, very busy.
Sure.
And still standing, still... enjoying recording these episodes and I guess enjoying that people are getting some enjoyment out of them. At the end of the day, that's always a nice little plus to these things. Yeah. It's been a long year. It's been a good year, especially for video games. And we hope that you all stay safe during the holiday season, that you get a lot of time off to play everything you want. And that you'll join us back here next year.
January.
On Checkpoint Chat. One day. TBC. One day. Watch Twitter. Matty will tweet something out one day.
Oh, voila.
He'll just be like, I'm alive. What did that Cyberpunk Twitter account tweet out before they dropped a trailer? It was like, beep, boop, beep, boop. We'll do that, yeah.
I mean, why not?
Yeah, why not?
Nice.
Thank you so much for listening. Again, The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom ended up being both our number one. So I guess formally the Checkpoint Chat game of the year, if you want to say that. But we'll be back next year. Have a great festive season. Enjoy the holidays if you are celebrating them. And we'll see you next year. Goodbye.
Bye.